Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to yet another episode of Gym Class All-Stars. As always, we're sponsored by Viget. Listen, bet fake imaginary coins, win real prizes. What's not to love? Us here at Gym Class All-Stars, we're no sports experts. We know everyone listening is probably smarter than we are at sports. So why not give it a try? You don't have to put any money in. They give you coins, you bet, and then you can win prizes. Some of the prizes include Amazon gift cards, PS5s. The NBA Finals contest is still going on, knock on wood, because tonight's game 6. You can still win some extra prizes on top of your coins for the bets. Download Viget now. Use code ALLSTARS. Help support us. Oh, boy. We've been on a bit of a hiatus. A lot of life-changing moves, literally and figuratively. It has been a lot. So I'm going to crack open a seltzer. No, it is not alcoholic seltzer, Robbie. Get your head out of the gutter. It is a...
I was gonna say, you said you went and got water. That was not
water. It is. It's just carbonated water with a hint of cherry. You know, this is my Deer Park. This is my go-to fuel for the podcast.
You like bubbles in your water?
I do. When you drink so much water every day, you just need to like... you need an afterthought. You need that little bit of kick to it. And, you know, it's healthier than soda. Deer Park, if you're listening to this for a reason, please sponsor us. I will consume so much more Deer Park seltzer if need be. All right, that was enough of a ramble. We are back. It has been about 2 weeks, give or take, since our last episode. A lot has happened. When we first talked about the NBA Finals, the Suns were up 1-0, and now the Bucks are up 3-2. So it's been about five games. Tonight's game 6, like I mentioned before. The entire tide of the series has shifted. It went from the Suns look like the clear-cut favorites in game 1, played phenomenal, won by double digits, looked the same in game 2. The Bucks have come roaring back and have won 3 straight, 2 at home, and then 1 in Phoenix in game 5. Tonight's could be the deciding game. I think just to update it before we go into a bit of a recap, Scott Foster, who is Chris Paul's Achilles heel, is refereeing. So it's not looking good for the Suns, but I think Chris Paul is going to be, this is probably his last chance of getting a ring, I would say. So tonight is do or die for him. And Chris Paul is one of those veterans who will dig deep. But Robbie, we have a lot to unpack. Where should we start?
Well, let's just start right where we were at, because the NBA Finals are going to end tonight. I know it's as shocking as I have been anti-Bucks all playoffs.
You have.
But I was talking to some buddies, and I was saying all finals, especially after the first few games, that the first team to win a road game was going to win the NBA Finals. And lo and behold, the Milwaukee Bucks took game 5 on the road in spectacular fashion. All 3 of their guys went off. Giannis with 32, Middleton with 29. And guess what? Jrue Holiday was, in fact, worth 3 first-round draft picks. Despite what I may have said months and months ago, Jrue Holiday hasn't had the most consistent playoff run for Milwaukee. But when he's needed to show up, he has done it in every way possible, offense, defense, whatever you need from him, he's been doing. The biggest difference, though, is Giannis Antetokounmpo, who will be the finals MVP, simply because the Phoenix Suns don't have a superstar. So they just don't have somebody that can really statistically and on the court ability do what Giannis does. They just don't have that athletic punch. They have, you know, very athletic players, Michael Bridges, Jay Crowder, but none of these guys are going to be able to do it for 48 minutes like Giannis can. I'm not going to, you know, Middleton isn't quite as good as Booker or Paul, but he's done spectacularly as well. He's given Giannis that consistency that he's needed these last few years to make a good playoff run. Now you got Milwaukee in their own house, one of the best home teams in basketball. And guess what? The last team to go down 0-2 in the NBA Finals and then win 3 straight was the 2006 Miami Heat that had my favorite player of all time on it. So when I saw that stat, it was the last cherry on top of me just buckling over and saying, all right, the Bucks have put together a fantastic season and have my bet to become NBA champions tonight.
All right. That's some strong words to say the least. I want to spitball a few observations that I've had. And I want you to say if you agree or think that's absolute garbage what I have observed. Devin Booker, well, you said there's no clear-cut superstar like Giannis, and I agree with that. There's no top 10 player on the Suns, which we'll get into a little bit later. Has Devin Booker shown up in the finals? And I think the answer, other than it was game three or four. He has, there's game three, if anything. He has shown up. He's dropped two 40-point games, has shot the lights out. The one game where he scored 40, he didn't even shoot a or he didn't make a three, which to me is even more insane in the modern NBA. So has Devin Booker shown up in his, like, he was 25, 26?
Is his third or fourth season in the league?
I thought he was one of those guys who was like, he came in at like 18 kind of, and like has played for like 6 years.
You might be right, to be honest. But either way, first playoff appearance, first playoff run for Devin Booker. Yes, he has shown up. You know, the shooting like percentage hasn't necessarily been the prettiest from game to game. But other than that, Devin Booker has done everything he normally does. His issues lie in the fact that he isn't a great defensive player. You know, that's the biggest issue right now, is he's being asked to guard, you know, in a zone or Middleton. He can't really do that. That's not really his forte. And that's where we're seeing him struggle. But offensively, he has absolutely shown up. He's done what Devin Booker does. And so the fact that he isn't playing the best defense shouldn't be a shock to anybody at this point. And the Milwaukee Bucks should be going at him. But he's played as well as I would have expected him to.
Okay. And I would agree with that. Number two, while assuming the Bucks win the finals, Giannis will get the finals MVP. I'm in agreement with that. But without Chris Middleton, the Bucks would, I don't know about getting swept, but they would not win this finals at all. Chris Middleton has been that second piece and has scored a ton of points and is kind of the ISO score they needed. Do you agree with that?
I completely agree. I get an earful about Chris Middleton a day from my good buddy. He's shown up and he's giving this consistency. He's working his way towards being a top 25 player in basketball. He truly is. You know, I have a couple caveats for my list, is that Middleton moved up a spot for me. He's now 26 instead of 27. He's played great. It's always about, can he do it game to game, year to year? And at this point, you gotta start believing that he can.
And then the final one, Chris Paul. Has he choked?
Yeah. I hate to say it, but Phoenix was in the driver's seat. 2-0. I know Chris Paul's not a scorer per se, but he should be right at or around 20 every single game. He's been at 16. He's been struggling some games. He's got a lead in every single way at this point. Booker's obviously the go-to scorer, but Paul needs to be the number two option and needs to be consistent in that sense. And the last few games, at least, hasn't been. He still has a chance because, again, he's the smartest player on the court in any given moment in that series. But it's an uphill battle at this point. You have to win in one of the toughest stadiums to win. He didn't set himself up at this point very well in these last few games.
Chris Paul is one of those players who will have games where he'll score 40 and then other game, well, maybe not 40, but like 30 plus. And then we'll have those games where he scores like 10 and, you know, doesn't do a whole lot. Mm-hmm. But I thought he would step up when they needed him to. Chris Paul's that type of guy where he kind of like Jimmy Butler, where he'll always step up when needed. And what really sort of took me out of that zone was one of the games down the stretch, he had a turnover, right last possession, crunch time type deal. I think it may have been game five, turned it over, and, you know, Bucks scored on the other end. You know, that to me, it's disappointing to see, because Chris Paul, for one, very smart point guard that has little to no nothing in terms of turnovers, but then to do it in his only finals appearance and like probably his first and last chance, like, to me, it's demoralizing and disappointing. But yeah, unless he wins tonight and wins game seven, he kind of has choked.
I don't know if you noticed this, but the defining moment of game five, in my opinion, was when Giannis got fouled at the end of the game. He missed his free throw, but the time when he tipped it back to the Bucks at the end of the game. If you were watching that play, Devin Booker and Chris Paul were at the top of the key. And if you're a basketball player, you know that those two players' responsibility are to box out the shooter, especially when it's someone big like Giannis. Devin Booker ran straight into the paint. He just ran right by Giannis. And Chris Paul didn't even work his way in front of him. That was the moment, because there was no one in front of him. So he just ran forward and tipped the ball back. That was it. Chris Paul fucked up. Devin Booker fucked up. There's no way around it. You can really boil that game down to that play. And then miss opportunity from their two best players. It's it for both of them, despite the fact that Chris Paul is what, a decade and a half older. It's the nerves of being here for the first time. It hit them. They weren't paying that pristine amount of attention that we're used to from this Phoenix squad. And it really showed in that moment.
I mean, the big thing as well from game five was the fact that Jrue Holiday stepped up and finally had his coming out party in terms of scoring 20 plus points. He was leading the charge when they were down, I think it was down like 18 or so in the first half, really stepped up to bring them back, and then, you know, piled on some points. He had Middleton chipping in, obviously Giannis, consistent driver. It seems like Giannis especially is hungry for this championship, which is finally good to see, because the past few seasons it's ended abruptly or ended just short for, you know, whatever it was, whether it was Kawhi or whether it was, you know, running into the Heat and getting injured too. Like nothing seemed to work out, but it's good to see that, you know, he's pushing. It'll be interesting to see how it goes tonight. I mean, there's at home, so there's significant less pressure on him. You won't have people chanting 1-10 as he shoots a free throw. He'll have the home crowd to hype him up, all that. The one other thing, we saw the incredible chase down block Giannis had. Bucks social media called it the quote-unquote best playoff block of all time. Do you agree? The answer is no.
No.
LeBron exists.
Thank you.
No matter how much you like or dislike LeBron, we know how clutch and how incredible that play was. So
I don't want my bias to stick through too much, but like, come on, guys. Watch the two blocks and then tell me which. Like, come on.
I saw it on Instagram. I looked in the comments. It was, the entire feed was, okay, come on. Like, I know I don't like LeBron, but LeBron's block is the best of all time. It was just like thousands of comments like that. So I thought that was funny. Speaking of LeBron, though, he did show up to game five. Mm-hmm. And
recruiting.
Yeah. Did you watch Space Jam 2?
No, I'm still in protest, not quite protest, because I don't really care, but like, I just look so, I've not heard anything good about it yet.
I haven't either. I guess to anyone listening, check out our buddies Box Ops QBs. They did a podcast about it. I'm sure they usually have pretty good thoughts and are usually pretty optimistic about this stuff. So I'd probably get it from them or watch it yourself. It's on HBO Max, isn't it?
Yep.
Not sponsored, but just want to let you know.
We'll get there. All right, yeah. So that's what we got for the finals here. You know, again, we may have a champion named. Otherwise, regardless, we'll let you know next episode. But the other news in basketball comes in terms of the Olympics and the Olympic team. Bradley Beal was sent home because he received a positive COVID test, so he was not going to be able to participate. And then Kevin Love essentially just opted out. He didn't really want to play. He wanted to spend time with his family during the offseason. So they had to be replaced. There were some theories, Christian Wood, Duncan Robinson, and we got a just fantastic combination. We got Keldon Johnson of the San Antonio Spurs teaming up with his coach, and then JaVale McGee of the Denver Nuggets. Daddy JaVale back in action. Three-time NBA champion, first-time Olympian now. So then the other caveat to this is that Zach LaVine isn't going to be traveling right away, as he's in the health and safety protocols. And if he gets a positive test, won't be on Team USA. Starting to thin out in terms of guards here, is USA in any real amount of trouble to win the Olympic gold for basketball?
Yes, without a doubt. They are very much in trouble. Kevin Love isn't, you know, a necessary piece to winning gold. And not saying Bradley Beal is a very nice piece to have, but when you place it, like, Keldon Johnson is kind of a good piece to have. Like, I think he's hungry is kind of what I'm getting at. Like, he'll really try. Like, he's young and playing for Pop as well. JaVale McGee, I'm sure he's happy to be there and excited and will put forth the best effort, but I don't know how much that helps. It's going to come down to how much effort they put in those, you know, exhibition games versus the Olympics. I'm not 100% sure. I mean, you know, the one against Nigeria, Nigeria shot like 50% from three, which is, you know, not all teams are going to have that. You know, they lost the next game, but they beat Argentina, who's a pretty high ranked team. So stuff can go well. I'm just concerned you have sort of an upstart team like a Nigeria that just is really hungry and is trying their hardest is going to take them down. The good and bad to that, The good will be the next Olympics. We will send a God squad to the Olympics because we can. The USA is never satisfied unless they win. But I'm a little bit concerned because it seems like there's not a lot of team chemistry. It seems like a bunch of star players who can score on will, but you kind of need a bit more in the Olympics, especially with, you know, foreign refs.
And it's a more physical game too, which these NBA players were very not used to. One thing I do want to say about that Nigeria team quick though, is that they have a lot of NBA players, a lot of young NBA players, three young Heat players, Chizimi Metu, I believe he's on the Kings.
And Precious.
A few other players.
They have Precious and Josh Okogie.
Precious. They have Gabe Vincent, who's been their top scorer. He's on the Heat.
Okay.
Kazuki Okpala as well. And a couple more. Ekpe Udo, who I don't think is in the NBA anymore, but was a longtime backup for the Jazz. They have a few players. They have good pieces. They're just very young in terms of talent. Going over to the USA, though, I am as scared as I have ever been for Team USA, but I'm not scared for Team USA because at the end of the day, the two teams we beat in our 2-2 play-in kind of like warm-up games were the two best teams we played in Argentina and Spain, Spain being the next best team in the world to us. We also have, of course, as always, by far the most talented roster. You know, Dame may not be the best defender, but he's still the best point guard anybody's going to be thrown out there. Kevin Durant is the best player that anybody's going to be thrown out there. It is going to take work. This is not just going to be something we're going to be handed. We do lose every once in a while, but like, if this team really wants it, they will get it. And that, regardless of JaVale McGee and Keldon Johnson being on the roster, I'm not overly concerned. I mean, Keldon Johnson even played great in his first game, getting to play with his coach. Honestly, wasn't even that mad about that addition.
Honestly, though, looking back, I mean, they lost to Australia. That was the second team. Australia with Ben Simmons, though, kind of seems like a pretty good team.
Australia's a great roster of NBA players. They got Dellavedova. They got Ingles. They have a few others. Ben Simmons would make them a legitimate contender, but also not because he can't score a basketball.
Tough.
Always have to throw that in there.
Tough.
That's pretty much it though. The Olympics gonna start. We'll keep you posted on basketball, and then of course, you know, that rest of the Olympics is not the only event, but maybe our favorite. Last little bit for the NBA here. There were rumors that Portland superstar Damian Lillard was going to potentially ask for a trade. He has more or less put these rumors to sleep, saying he expects to start the year in Portland. If there's, you know, more to that, him saying I'm gonna start the year in Portland, who knows? But you know, if Dame were to be sent away from Portland, other than your own team, what team do you want to see him go to, or is the most likely team he would go to?
Okay.
Because the Sixers and Heat were two teams that did, in fact, come up in trade talks for Dame.
But you guys would have to jettison a ton of cap space to get him, and you know that. But, if, you know, no income tax in Miami is always the grab. Every year they talk about it. I think Philly is reasonable because you offload Ben Simmons' contract, which is kind of the whole point of the offseason. Ben Simmons is now being brought up in trade talks, which I don't think they would trade him for anything short of a superstar. It's not like they're going to look for CJ McCollum. They're looking for one of those top 20 players to kind of pair along with Embiid and Tobias and all that. If he goes to the Lakers, which he won't because they don't have any cap space, I will stop watching basketball. You've heard that here first. And also anyone who wants that is a sicko. To me, the Knicks seem interesting. And I mean that in the, I don't want Tom Thibodeau with him because he'll literally grind out Damian Lillard, and that no one wants. But the idea of him going and sort of upstarting the Knicks again would be interesting. You'd have finally have a superstar you could pair with Randall. That to me is interesting. Duo. Yeah, and you have a pretty solid defensive young team. It would take a few years, so that's kind of up to what Dame's timetable is, but that's an interesting idea, bigger markets, all that. I really
you
can't
know my biggest fear.
What's up?
Golden State.
Who would they get rid of though?
Wiggins and picks. Wait, Wiggins for whatever reason has not fallen out of grace in the NBA, scouters.
I love that.
He's $38 million, whatever the hell he gets. It's so much money. He's not getting any better. And teams love him because of that, because he's still like 23 years old. He's very young still. He could still get good. But my God, if you're gonna throw him in these conversations of other stars, then like, yeah, Golden State's the team you have to talk about because they're the team that'll do it. They will sacrifice the next 5 years of picks. They will sacrifice Wiggins. They will sacrifice Wiseman if that means putting Dame next to Curry and Thompson.
But what would you do? Would you put Thompson at small forward?
Oh, 100%. Klay Thompson's 6'8". He's been playing small forward even at shooting guard this
whole time. Okay, all right.
That's why he's so good. Well, not why only, but it's a huge reason as to why he's so good. And then you got Oubre still, who can play a small ball four. You got Draymond. You want to bring in a different center. You still have Looney, whatever. I know we always talk about the Warriors need a real center, but they don't need a real center.
They love especially Kayvon if Dame and Looney.
Curry are on the same
fucking They team. Absolutely adore him. And I think Kayvon Looney does exactly what you need him to do. Yeah, I would okay, I don't have a problem with that because to me, while you could say that's going to ruin the NBA, Curry and Lillard, you know, Curry's still a defensive liability, one of the best shooters of all time, but how would that pairing work in terms of who needs the ball to shoot? That's an interesting dynamic, which I think would take a bit to like kind of get used to. That's not an auto championship. Like if you put him next to a small forward and LeBron James in the mm-hmm. center and AD, like you're top heavy at the guards and in the backcourt. So I mean, I'm also biased for Golden State. I know I am. I like how organic it was. I mean, they got Kevin Durant, which sort of ruined that, but besides Kevin Durant, everything was homegrown. It wasn't like they just lured people in to sign. It was, we drafted Curry, drafted Thompson, drafted Draymond, lucked out, and then, you know, added a few free agents here or there, but it was kind of all them. I would love if you had a championship, period, but if you did a Golden State, I think that would be an interesting send-off.
Yeah, what a weird way to dominate, like, two halves of decades by Golden State.
Imagine if they kept Wiseman with that, too.
I can't imagine they would.
But I don't think so, but I like the idea.
I mean, unless you're also trading Draymond, which just makes no sense.
But
well, okay, I understand he's slowing down a little bit, but that's maybe a discussion for
timetables. Yeah, but basically, once that ends, they will be just it's the roster's an extensive rebuild over. For years, but
over
hey, when the championships.
Jordan Poole's for days. All right, that's it for the NBA here again. Game 6 of the NBA Finals essentially is going to start right after we finish up here, so we'll keep you posted on that. Moving into the NFL, an odd amount of news for football. We're going to start with the quarterback situation here in Green Bay. So they offer Aaron, you know, we've been talking about Aaron Rodgers. We're not really sure what he's going to do. And now the report comes out that Aaron Rodgers is offered a 2-year deal to become not just the highest paid quarterback in football, but the highest paid player in football. And the man says no, clearly stating that playing for Green Bay is not an option for him. It is not something he's going to do this season. So I will ask you one last time, is Aaron Rodgers going to play football this season? And is he going to show up to game 6 of the NBA Finals wearing a Broncos hat?
That's ultimate levels of petty and toxic, but I'm here for that. Oh boy. I'm shocked. I, you know, coming from a pretty credible source that they gave him a 2-year deal or extension and he would have been the highest paid player in football. I don't know what he's after, really. I mean, I don't know if it's one of those where that's what he was looking for, but the bridge has been burned and now it's, you know, irreparable. I'm stumped. I really am. I don't think the Packers will trade him. I can see him holding out for a bit. I don't know if it'd be the full season, but I can see one of those where he's on like a, you know, it's called the IR, but he's on the team. They take up a roster spot, but he's not playing.
He's inactive or something. Yeah. Do you think it would have made a difference if it was only a 1-year deal that still made him the highest paid player in football?
No, I think he's old enough, or I think he's looking to, I think he wants to be like under contract to like Tom Brady's age, like 42 sort of. So I think he was maybe missing a few years. Because he's, what, 36, 37 maybe? This is the Emmanuel Sanders debate all over again. But, I mean, if those reports are true, which I believe they are, that seems very generous. I tend to believe it's one of those, like, this took way too long, I'm not going to accept it type deals. It has to be. Otherwise, like, unless Aaron Rodgers is looking for more money, which to be the highest paid player in the NFL at this age, and then also wanting more money, but also wanting a championship, you got to think that's a bit too much. And yeah, I think I could see a situation, and we'll talk about this and spitball it, where he sits out, Jordan Love plays, the first like three games go magical. Jordan Love looks like a star. The Packers found their replacement. It's like Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers, Jordan Love, haven't missed a beat. And then like game five or so, maybe he gets hurt or just has a horrible performance, and the whispers start to come in. And then game six, he's even more awful. Or the backup like comes in, he's horrible. And they're just like, Aaron, please come back. And gets dragged on a bit more. And then by like week eight, he comes back. He's like, all right, I'll save Green Bay, I'll do it.
And then they lose in the NFC Championship again.
If they're doing like 4-4 and he gets the NFC Championship, that's a win for the Packers. That plays out that way.
He won the MVP last season, right?
Yes.
Has there ever been an MVP with the exception of if they were hurt the next year, to not play the following season?
No. And there has never been an MVP that has not played for the same team next season.
That's crazy.
At least from the quarterback position, I believe. But I would imagine Mark Mosley stayed with the Redskins. That's about, or Washington football team. But yeah, they stay. I mean, you have to lock up your MVP. It only makes sense. So that's a doozy to say the least, but we'll keep you updated on that. I'm sure, I don't think there'll be a trade. I imagine a holdout's kind of what's coming next.
That moving forward here off of Aaron Rodgers, Cam Akers, the young stud running back for the Rams, unfortunately suffered a torn ACL, and he will miss the entire upcoming NFL season. It's more than likely he's going to miss the entire season. Daryl Henderson probably going to have to get under contract and take over the reins yet again. They have like a three-headed running back system, so I would expect something similar to happen in LA's backfield again this season. But you know, maybe if someone can step out like Akers started to do, then they'll kind of let that guy be the bell cow for a little bit. But very unfortunate to see young guys go down. But on the flip side of the torn ACL, Saquon Barkley, who suffered one this past season, is starting to say that he is expecting to be ready for week one. I know you as an Eagles fan don't necessarily love that, but as a football fan, I'm very excited to see the guy that I used to run track against playing football again.
I mean, you got to root for the local guy. I mean, exactly. The best thing to come out of the area, most likely. So,
except us.
Yes, except gym class all-stars co-hosts. But, yeah, listen, I don't like the Giants. You know, never have, never. But you can't not like Saquon. So that's my thoughts and opinions on it. Hoping he gets healthy and looking forward to competing against him. Because other than him, I still think the Giants will be kind of a dumpster fire. So we'll see.
All right, so then the next bit here would be the Pittsburgh Steelers. So they had Bud Dupree, unfortunately, leave for Tennessee early in the offseason. So they had a kind of a vacancy to fill at the opposite linebacker of Watt. They're going to bring in Melvin Ingram from the Chargers. He's had a very solid couple of years there. You know, he's not going to be quite the level that Bud Dupree has been and was in that first eight games last season next to Watt. But I personally am very happy about the signing because Alex Highsmith was going to be the starter. That was not going to be great. So it's nice to see a more of a household name in there. Just a one-year contract, so kind of a trial basis run or even a placeholder. But for now, Pittsburgh trying to lock down the middle of the defense, which is always a very important part of their scheme. So I'm excited to see a good name there. And then finally, back to the White House. Tom Brady, Buccaneers, visit the White House as Super Bowl champions. Walking down up to the White House, someone's going, Tom, you got residency here at this point. This is his seventh trip to the White House. Crazy stuff. But it's good to see them back in the White House. Got to meet President Biden. And yeah, Tampa Brady.
One thing, if you look at the photo of the team, Bruce Arians, tomato. Like, I'm not even trying to be mean, just bright red. And not like, oh, he's a little bit sunburned. No, like, he's bright, bright red. Going off Tom Brady, though, reports that he played the entire 2020 season on a torn MCL. Do you believe that?
No. Okay, he's gone shit. I believe he probably played a handful of games and maybe even ended the season on a torn MCL. That's possible because sometimes those knee injuries do happen where you don't quite feel it. Like there's this great story that Rajon Rondo tore his ACL and then the next day recorded a triple-double before realizing it does happen. But an entire season with a professional medical staff like that, there's no way. There's absolutely no chance.
I believe like a slight tear type deal where it's not.
Yeah.
That's what that's the most credible it can possibly be. I know Tom's not a running quarterback by any means. And I think you or I could outrun him. No problem. To me though, even then, like the mobility, the footwork, all that, like eventually his knee would have to crumple. Like there's gotta be some threshold.
Exactly.
So we don't believe that, but I'm sure he played under injury. That's, you know, he's getting older. Obviously he's going to have injuries, but yeah, not a full tear and all that. So that's my thought on it.
Either way, he should be back and fully healthy to try and run it back in year two in Tampa Bay.
Yeah. Allegedly he tore his ACL and he's going to play the entire 2021 season. So
he's going to win the Super Bowl and the MVP too. Don't worry
about it. It's that TB12 diet, I guess. It just fixes your MCL.
It takes away your knees, but everything else is A1.
Your knees are just gone.
All right, that's it for football today. Moving on into hockey, just a tiny little thing here. The Tampa Bay Lightning did, in fact, win back-to-back Stanley Cups. No shoes being eaten on the podcast this year, unfortunately. We'll have to wait until next season. But, you know, spectacular run from the Lightning. You were calling it pretty much since the beginning of the playoffs that they were looking primed to repeat and that they did, losing just one game in the Stanley Cup. Excellent season by Montreal as well. But here we are, Tampa Bay looking sharp. We'll see if they can three-peat come next season. But until then, the next thing to look forward to in hockey is going to be the expansion draft. We'll get to in just a second here. Yeah, it looks like you're ready for something.
Well, so they had this the Stanley Cup parade, like a boat parade. They had to send it. They had to send the Stanley Cup back because it got dented.
We broke it. We want another one.
What is? Oh, okay, wait, just listen. That throw by Tom Brady on the Super Bowl parade to the other boat, like a legendary moment. I love it so much. But listen, I know, like, you're a professional player, you're all excited, you're all, you know, boozed out of your mind on the cereal parade, but why would you throw these trophies? Like, these are such valuable trophies.
I can understand Brady because it's like, what is it to him at this point? Like, it's nothing at this point.
Fair.
But everyone else, I agree with you.
There's also one Stanley Cup. Like, they make a Lombardi trophy every year. Like, the Stanley Cup, they update and etch. And also that thing, like I when I was in Canada, I had a chance to like take a photo next to it. It's some heft to it. Like, it's pretty well built.
I believe it. That's a big cup, man.
They dented it. That is just, I love it, but it's so bad.
Hockey players a different breed. What can I say?
Oh, they are. listen, we love the Stanley Cup. It's the best trophy because you can drink out of it. Plain and simple.
Amen to that. All right. Like I said, the next big thing for the NHL will be the expansion draft to bring in the Seattle Kraken. We'll bring you up to date on that when it comes further. I believe the players protected and unprotected have been released, so you can look that up, and we'll give you the list of who the Kraken select time does come.
Suppose the Kraken being expansion team most likely won't be bad, and seeing that I am going to be a Buffalo Sabres fan for the time being, do you want to make a little bet?
Sure.
Well, let's just, so the Sabres, I don't know how much you follow hockey or the Buffalo Sabres because no one really does. The Buffalo Sabres had the number one overall pick for the third time in 4 years. Not a very good team. I mean, they're a lottery pick every year. Do you think the Kraken will do better than the Sabres next year?
Yes.
No. Damn. All right. I'm rooting for the Sabres. We'll make a gentleman's bet and deal with punishments when this off season or when the season ends. And if we remember.
So, I'm about to say, well, jot this one down, but
that's on you to remember because I'm probably going to lose this bet.
That's very fair. Very fair. And a gentleman's bet, you don't bring it up when you lose if the other doesn't remember.
Go Sabres.
All right, that's it for hockey. One more sport here before we crack into the next 10 for our top 50 NBA players list. We got baseball here. Trade deadline rapidly approaching. You're going to hear a lot of Cubs names circling around, but none of them have moved yet. Except one, that man's name is Joc Pederson. He was sent to the Atlanta Braves. Braves already been playing without Marcelo Ozuna, and now to pile on, Ronald Acuña, their superstar, tore his ACL. He's out for the year. So Joc Pederson is going to step into most likely an everyday role at the top of the Braves lineup. You're shaking your head. You know, the Braves didn't have to give up a whole lot to get him, just some minor league, not huge prospect, second baseman, I believe. Yeah, Joc Pederson's a guy who hits bombs. This is not good for the Phillies, and this is not good as a Phillies fan to see. As this made no sense. All my Cubs fans are shook too, but you know, they make bad trades all the time. Jose Quintana for Eloy Jimenez, stuff like that. They're used to it. Us as fans, still a little shaky.
I'm disappointed. I mean, the Cubs have been playing fairly well this season, especially than what we had thought. And the Braves have been under par for what, you know, they've been shaky to say the least. I mean, injuries have definitely played a part, but they were definitely decimated in the outfield. And well, now they're not. Joc Pederson definitely fills that void. And that's scary. I mean, I don't know how much it'll do, but for what they gave up and what they got, the Braves, that's good for the Braves.
Unfortunately. Staying on the Cubs for a second here, though, do you think they're going to move a star player like Bryant or probably not Baez, but maybe Rizzo?
It would be in their best interest to, because with moving Pederson, it's signifying, oh, we're going to probably enter a rebuild at some point. But to me, they seem so attached to Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo, but they won't give them more money. So I think it's going to be one of those. They're just going to be stuck in like purgatory and kind of just hang there. And the Cubs fans will be like, yay, Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo in their 25th season here. Oh, but wait, they're miserable.
Oh, but wait, we have 25 wins in September. That'd be awful.
Do they still play the Blues in Chicago?
Oh, but yeah, well, you know, the Cubs have been probably the most talked about team with this trade deadline. They are in that area where they could try and make a push for the playoffs, but it's tough. They're struggling a little bit right now. So we'll see. We'll keep tabs on all of that as it moves forward. That's the only notable trade that's been made so far. I want to talk about the Giants. We keep bringing them up here because it's deep into July, and they are still the best team in baseball, despite having, I think, only two all-stars. I believe Posey was an all-star, and I believe they had Dossman, and I don't think they had another all-star. Spectacular season. And guess what? At the moment, Evan Longoria, Brandon Belt, and Brandon Crawford are all on the IL. They are all out. Posey missed a little bit of time before the all-star break. They're injured, and they are still playing spectacular baseball. They just hammered the Dodgers last night. Is this a Giants year? Are they going to do it? This is crazy. It's absurd how well they're doing.
I don't think they'll make the playoffs. I could honestly see them winning the West. I don't think this is the year, though, for them to win the World Series. I think it's going to be one of those. They'll have the best record, maybe, and then they're going to lose, like, maybe in the NLCS, or they're going to get stuck somewhere. And don't ask me why I think that. It's just that's my own intuition here. The Giants are one of those teams that when they make the World Series, they just want it. And, you know, that's good for them. That's why they won two World Series in the 2010s.
And next year, they're going to be the worst team in baseball again.
They probably will. And I couldn't for the life of me tell you why. I guess going off of that, though, so before we get into some other teams, this brings up about All-Stars. Had All-Star weekends. Home Run Derby. Did you watch it?
I saw how well people were doing in the first round, so I turned it on for the end, and I watched Mancini versus Alonso, and I was rooting hard for Trey Mancini, of course, because, you know, screw the Mets. But
yes,
it was very entertaining. The Home Run Derby is one of those events that you never think is going to be all that fun, and then usually is just like a very fun event. Lots of bombs. What was it? A couple guys hit 30 in the first round.
Yeah, and the Alonso run was 520, I think.
Yeah.
A moonshot, to say the least. The one thing, though, and this is disappointing, the stat tracking for how far the baseball was going was very messed up. ESPN really dropped the ball with that. It was pretty shoddy production, but I think everyone can relate to the idea of just hitting a ball as hard and as far as you can go. It's exciting. Everyone loves a good home run unless it's against your team. Mm-hmm. So to me, just seeing a ton of them is like just pure dopamine for any fan.
Also, Pete Alonso has made more money for the winning the last two home run derbies than he has in his entire career based on his contract so far, which
gotta love MLB contracts.
Oh yeah.
The other thing too,
yeah,
the actual game itself, Shohei Ohtani, starting pitcher, leadoff hitter. Definitely, he did okay, I guess. Best way to say it. But Vlad Jr., All-Star Game MVP, I was watching it in like the second or third inning. They had Tatis mic'd up and they're on him. And Vlad just hit a moonshot and just Tatis is like, whoa, just like reacted to it. Like really genuine reaction, which I love. First and foremost, players need to be mic'd up. That's a given. Yes. I know they're afraid of someone dropping like an F-bomb or anything like that, but to me, that makes it all the better and
worth the risk.
Also, though, Vlad Jr. still on a hot run, I think would probably be the guy to kind of come after Ohtani in terms of the AL MVP race.
I would agree.
But I think Ohtani right now, assuming he doesn't get injured, is the runaway guy to win it. Exciting on the mound and also hitting. I mean, a few days, or I think it was yesterday, or maybe it was today, a highlight of him literally just hitting a ground ball and outrunning the first baseman.
Mm-hmm.
No, people love Ohtani.
He's a spectacle. Yes. You literally do not see this. Pitching and batting at an all-star level of each is absurd. It is the reason he's ahead, because any other given year, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. would probably be the AL MVP. Mm. He's having a sensational year as well, but it is just the fact that he's doing both and doing both so well. As long as he can avoid like any more performances on the mound like he did against the Yankees, 2/3 of an inning, 7 earned runs, he's going to be just fine. He's not just going to win the MVP. He might even win the Cy Young in the AL, which is just it's possible. It's absurd. Speaking of the Angels, though, really fast, I don't know if you noticed this, but so the MLB draft was a little bit ago. The Angels had 20 picks. They drafted 20 pitchers. I want to shout out the Angels organization, because they knew exactly what their team needed to get, and that is what they went out and did, and I respect the hell out of it.
Yeah. They have Rendon, they have Mike Trout, and they have Ohtani. That's three bats. That's plenty. And then I wish I knew more about the Angels roster.
David Fletcher's been great too.
Yeah, you can kind of round it out. I think one thing I will say, one of the pitchers in their farm system is Connor Higgins, who went to high school a year older than us. So that's cool to me. And then speaking of the MLB draft, my alma mater, Lehigh, had two pitchers get drafted. One the second round, the Giants, I believe. Nice. Mason Black, if I'm not mistaken. Then one like in the 20th round, who I don't remember who he went to. But, I always have to shout out my Lehigh guys. My former lab partner, Levi Stout, in the Mariners organization, doing pretty well. Nice. And my former capstone partner, Jason Reynolds, in the Padres organization in single A, doing a lot better than he was before COVID. So I'm really happy for them. Padres, if you're listening, call up my buddy Jason. He'll turn you to first place in no time. Giants got nothing on him.
But nothing, baby.
Listen, hope to see him in the MLB at some point in the majors, not the minors. But last but not least, Philadelphia Phillies. This is Phillies, our baby. Annual session where we love to talk about them. They're doing well, because they are. They are hot. They were beating the Marlins, which they never, ever do. And it's the most frustrating thing in the world, because the Marlins are not good this year. But they've hit a stride. Rhys Hoskins is playing well. JT Realmuto is, the all-star we all thought. He had a
ECIB, best catcher in baseball.
There you go. They look hot. The only problem, as always, pitching. But they are, what, 2.5 games behind the Mets right now?
2.5 out. 7-3 in the last 10. We are experimenting with new closers now. It's very fun. Ranger Suarez has taken a couple. He blew 1-2. Don't worry. We still haven't figured it out yet. He and Norris are splitting time, so we're working on improving our bullpen.
yes.
I'll say this, though. McCutchen, one of the hottest players in baseball right now. He's been runs for fiery. Days. Exactly. It's something the Phillies have needed desperately, especially with Hoskins cooling down a little bit. you know, the first four in our order, though, has been pretty good, especially if McCutchen's going to continue to bat fourth and continue to bat well. You know, Segura, Realmuto, Harper, and McCutchen, that can win us games by itself as long as the pitching does its job. Wheeler, like we said all year, has been great. Nola's had his inconsistencies, but we know what he can do. What else have we really had, though, in terms of on-the-mound success? That's the issue. I mean, one of the worst closing systems in baseball, one of the worst just bullpens in baseball in general, and the back three starters. Velasquez has his good games, but he has his bad games. Same with Eflin. Eflin's injured right now, if I'm not mistaken, too. And that Spencer Howard kid sucks. What can we do at this point? Do we need to consider making a trade?
Well, I need to say Jose Alvarado, a closer, reliever, whatever I call it, he is 6-0. He has 6 wins this year.
Damn.
But that's not good because he's a reliever.
He's a reliever, yeah.
That means he's like blowing saves and then winning games, which, hey, I'm glad we're winning, but I digress. So in terms of a trade, I always allude back to when they were competitive for the World Series titles back in the late 2000s, early 2010s. They got Cliff Lee. They got Roy Halladay. They had Roy Oswalt at some point. Yes, you have to get that third piece. Zach Wheeler, all-star, playing great this year. Aaron Nola, while he may not be the Cy Young you were hoping for, still a very serviceable pitcher. After that, you have Eflin, so it's eh. You got, is Pivetta still there?
Nah, he's in Boston. We got Vince Velasquez at the
four. Oh, we have Vince Velasquez again? Oh, God.
Yeah, he sucks. He's good every once in a while for like 4 innings.
He's good for 4 innings. You need a third pitcher. If you can get one at a reasonable price, go for it. You need it. If you can get relievers too, but I don't think anyone's going to really deal a reliever. You also get that. I mean, when we had Brad Lidge, we were star-studded. I'm not trying to relive the glory days. It was one of those things where the Phillies made those deadline moves and they paid off tremendously. I don't know if this year's a World Series run by any means, but if you can get a third piece either in the offseason or in the trade deadline, you're going to be in a good position. I think the offense, when it clicks, it's a great offense and really great hitting lineup in baseball, but pitching's really where they're is the downfall.
Yeah, we'll see if the Phillies do make any moves or what other moves are made. You know, we talked about the Cubs, of course. We'll let you know what happens with the trade deadline coming up real soon. Until then, that's going to be it for the news here, as we're going to now go through. We're almost to the end here in our list for the top 50 current NBA players. Today, we're going to be doing numbers 20 through 11. We're getting really into the superstars of the NBA here. We're going to start also having some more similarities in terms of our rankings potentially here. So say, let's just get into it here. So number 20, Alex, who are you dealing?
All right. Number 20. So some say he's the second coming of Shaq. Others say he just looks like he needs to lose weight. Was he a god or was he just a kid? It's Zion Williamson, power forward, small forward from the Pelicans. And you're looking at me like I'm crazy. No.
Yes.
No. Zion Williamson is shooting like, I think it's 57, 58%. He's on a horrible team, but you cannot disagree of how dominant he is and how great he has played in only 2 seasons, and the first season was cut so short both with COVID and injuries. If he stays healthy, he is a dominant force and probably the most dominant player we've seen since LeBron James, quite frankly.
Old statement. I respect it, at least in the terms of physicality. Look, I'll say this at the very least. I think the next, you know, if we were to redo this in a year or something along those lines, I think that's where I would have him top 20. But in terms of how good he just plainly is right now, I think it's fair to say he's a top 20 talent. I think that's very fair. So I'll give you a little more credit than my facial expressions may have led on at the beginning there.
I get it. I mean, there's no track record to go off of. But from what we've seen, his game has translated very well to the NBA. The Pelicans are a dumpster fire, and I think his family knows that, which is why he wants out, even though he won't say it. That's what's – like – I genuinely see a future for Zion, assuming he stays healthy. But for a person that size and that athletic and like freakishly athletic in terms of jumping ability, that's scary. What do you get?
It's terrifying. Imagine that man running at you from 16 feet away.
I would run away.
Horrifying. All right, Zion's number 20 for you to start this list here. For me, he rose a couple spots based off of his run in this year's playoffs. However, he is only ranked this high because it is a modern NBA that he plays in, an offensive-heavy NBA that he plays in. But nonetheless, top three or four playmaker in all of basketball and the most like Steph Curry we have ever seen. Number 20 for me, the point guard from Atlanta, Trae Young. Sensational season this year, led the Hawks to the conference finals, even won them two games. It's plain and simple. There's one thing he just simply doesn't know how to do. It's Ben Simmons, but the exact opposite. Ben Simmons can't score. Trae Young doesn't even know how to start thinking about defending somebody. I'm confident I could score on Trae Young, and I am even shorter than him and not an NBA player. He's great. He's fantastic at offense, an incredible shooter, incredible scorer, fantastic playmaker, even a decent rebounder for his size, almost four a game. Maybe the worst defensive player I've ever seen. Plain and simple. That's why I understand why you had him a little bit lower than I did. But in terms of being a leader, he really, really stepped up in his first playoff appearance. Again, I know the Sixers had the injury and they probably would have beat Atlanta if Embiid was fully healthy. But that's not what happened. Trae Young was able to take advantage of the scenario. And that's something that people like to call a fluke. That's not a fluke. That's the Joel Embiid getting hurt and the Sixers losing wasn't a fluke. It was what happened. Trae Young took advantage of the scenario better than some other players could have. So 20 for me is going to be Trae Young.
All right. Number 19. This man is significantly older than I thought he was. It seems like he doesn't age. And no, it's not Devin Booker, but we got Bradley Beal, number 19. You talked last week about why you didn't put him in the top 20. I understand why. I just think his ability to score on will is, it's incredible. Without Bradley Beal, the Wizards do not take a game off the Sixers. And I know Russell Westbrook is a large part of why they were competitive, at least a little bit in that series. But Bradley Beal does wonders. There's a reason why every offseason or every year, quite frankly, teams covet him and they will try and pick these ludicrous trade packages to get him. Great three-point shooter, ISO ball scorer, whatever. I mean, he's on a terrible Wizards team, but he drives it in. To say he'll win a championship, who knows? He seems to have a kind of a bad attitude, quite frankly. But I'm going to rank Bradley Beal at 19 just from how incredible he's at scoring.
Yeah, I mean, top two, three scorers in all of basketball. Yeah. Same issue with Trae Young, though. Not a great defender. All right, number 19 here. He's another player who slowly, and especially during this last playoff run, did rise on my list a little bit here. Number 19, you know him as Pandemic P. You love him. You love him as Playoff G. Paul George, PG-13, guard forward for the Clippers. Really showed out in the back half of the Clippers playoff run, especially once Kawhi went down, started putting up 40 spots. He still had his inconsistencies. So here's what it is. Paul George is, I think top 14 is probably where I cut off superstars at this point, maybe 15. So we're not talking about superstars quite yet. Paul George can be a superstar in terms of his playing ability. The issue is his inconsistencies. It's not that just like he isn't playing like a superstar every day. It's literally sometimes he just isn't shooting the basketball well. That becomes the biggest issue for him. If he can figure out what he did in Indiana that was so great, he'll get right back there. He hasn't lost a step or anything since he broke his leg. Anything like that, but consistency always comes out in the biggest moments. And even as well as he played this past offseason or this past playoffs, Paul George still has his struggles with it. So I'm gonna keep him right there at 19.
All right, number 18. You love the superhero, you Robbie Sarrett superhero Spider-Man. And I have to give it to the namesake of the nickname for the NBA, Donovan Mitchell, aka Spida. He's number 18 for me. in terms of what he has done for the Jazz, they didn't miss a beat between the Gordon Hayward era, quote unquote, and now Donovan Mitchell. He has taken them from what was assumed to be a rebuilding team after Hayward left in free agency to now a contender, and they were the number one seed in the West. It's incredible what he's done for the team. I think there's still, like, his game is still new. I think he's got to learn a bit more and get better, but that's only to be in the next echelon of players. He's already great, but he needs to take that next step to be a superstar and to really be dominant against, like, the LeBron James of the world, to really put Utah on the map. It's disappointing how his run came to an end this year, but he played very well in the playoffs, did a lot for the Jazz. So he's number 18 for me.
Yeah, Mitchell might be the biggest snub from the All-NBA teams, at least in my personal opinion. 18, it's, man, this was one of the tougher decisions that I had to make between my 17 and my 18. But what we ended up going with was, for number 18, I've got Devin Booker of the Phoenix Suns. He is playing spectacularly in the playoffs so far. He has just put up 40-point game after 40-point game in the finals. However, defensively, he is still somewhat of a liability for Phoenix. He's one of these guys that, again, is great at putting the ball in the basket. He's actually a very improved facilitator from when he first came into the league. But there's still a lot of stepping stones in terms of Booker's game that he has to take to really crack that top 15, crack that superstar borderline. But he's well on his way. By no means did I think he was going to be this far along this quickly. The Kobe comparisons are a little much. I think it's absurd, because the Phoenix Suns would be winning the finals right now if Kobe Bryant was Devin Booker. But Devin Booker is spectacular, and he's going to be a household all-star name for years to come. Number 18 for me, Mr. Devin Booker.
All right. Number 17. We're going to swing back a little bit to what you talked about earlier. We're not in a pandemic anymore, but this man will always forever be known as Pandemic P. It's Paul George. Yeah, you're right. Paul George has his moments where he looks like an incredible superstar and then looks like an utter bum, quite frankly. But when he is on, he is incredibly dominant. And I think we saw that in the Clippers system this year without Kawhi in the conference finals. He really showed up and kept the Clippers in a lot of games. And even when they were playing the Jazz, was the reason they were able to win the next two games, despite, you know, a lot of thoughts and a lot of, like, questions about, will the Jazz just win the NBA title? It was, no, the Clippers actually have a shot with Playoff P instead of Pandemic P. I'm curious to see what happens next year, because next year is the last year on their contracts, your Kawhi and Paul George. And then they have a player option, if I'm not mistaken. So
I believe Kawhi's player option is this year.
Ah, okay. Well, time will tell with that. But Paul George, I'm probably more high on him than I should be, but guy's dominant. I just always think back to his Indiana days when he's playing the Heat and just how good he was. But great defender, can be an incredible scorer when need be. He's number 17 on my list.
You know, I some people may criticize us, honestly, for having Paul George as high as we do. I think he was one of those players that we kind of grew up watching, so we know how good he can be. And like I said, or tried to exemplify, he hasn't really lost his step in terms of being able to do it. He just, like, doesn't do it as much. It's almost inexplicable.
He's one of those players who, like, has a switch where, you know, some days he'll score 40, other days he'll score 10. But it's not one of those, like, he does it when his team needs it. It's kind of just when he wants to do it, just which is not happens. A good thing.
Yeah, exactly. That's why he's not top 15 at this point. We're at number 17. That's what you just did. Mm-hmm. Perfect. Number 17 for me. We got real close with this one, but the Spider-Man, Donovan Mitchell. The thing I was talking about in terms of tough decisions was picking Mitchell and Booker. I knew they were going to be right next to each other on my list the whole time. First of all, Mitchell did score an entire point per game more than Devin Booker this year, 0.8 points per game more rebounds and more assists per game than Devin Booker. The biggest factor for me, though, was the fact that Donovan Mitchell not just was on the team with the slightly better record, he was definitively the best player on the best record team in basketball. Devin Booker was at best maybe the best player on, you know, just as good of a basketball team. That was the biggest issue for me. I love Donovan Mitchell. I think he's a slightly better defensive player than Booker. But in terms of like who would you rather start a franchise with? I mean, they're right there. You can't really go wrong picking either of these guys. But in terms of who has the more complete game at this point, I do think it's Donovan Mitchell. I think he's going to be the one to surprise people in terms of how good he really gets. Cause I think we all expect Booker to become this elite level 30 point per game scorer. I don't know how much more people expect out of Donovan Mitchell. I expect him to truly become the modern version of Dwayne Wade.
There you have it. I would tend to agree. I mean, Dwayne Wade's the parson of the Jazz now.
Right?
So that's, you know, take him under his wing to say the least. All right. Number 16. And this one pains me to every fiber of my being. I hate this player so much. And you know who I'm going to say. But he needs to be on this list because of how incredible he is. It's Kyrie Irving, Uncle Drew.
Mm-hmm.
The best ball handler of all time.
Yep.
Fastest, shiftiest player. This man doesn't miss layups. It's actually incredible. And they're not just like, you know, off the backboard. It's, you know, reversals and you know, even sometimes 360s you'll see. But, and this is kind of going back to sort of a thing in my life. Despite being a Sixers fan, I'm not as high on Allen Iverson as a lot of people are. And, you know, he's an incredible scorer, very dominant. But the one thing was, it seems like he was not a good team player. I mean, he was so dominant that he didn't have to be. But in the world of basketball, you have to be a team player. One person cannot win a championship in this modern NBA. At least two. Kyrie Irving, to me, is a toxic player to every fiber of my being. And you and I played with people like that, and we hate it. And I'm not trying to put my own bias in, but to me, Kyrie Irving can be a bit of that toxic player, toxic teammate that doesn't make any locker room situation good. Right now, the Nets, you know, still good. I'm concerned egos will start to clash. And I've seen it before in Cleveland. I hope he's matured. He's also a little bit of a wacko in terms of the flat earth stuff. I put him at 16 because of a player, but also his personality and his attitude holds him back. And you know, that's the one thing I would say. If he had a better attitude about things, I'd have him a lot higher on this, well, a few spots higher on the list at least.
No, that's a fair factor to consider. Kyrie Irving, as great as he is, he does bring that little bit of uncertainty and chaos almost to organizations. He leaves teams in devastation and joins these teams that don't need him that he wants to ruin next. So who can tell who Kyrie's next victim is? But, you know, it was always tough for me to kick him out of the top 15. I just barely didn't. So for me, number 16, this is why it hurt so bad too, because I do believe that this player on most anybody's list is a top 15 player in basketball. Clearly he's going to be on yours. The reason he didn't for me is because his team struggled so much this year. I understand there were injuries that factored in, but this guy, two of his first 3 years in the NBA, went to the conference finals in the East. He's one of the best scorers we have. But now it's time to just be a superstar at this point in his career. It's Jason Tatum of the Boston Celtics. He's incredible. I truly believe that he's going to be a top 10 player in the next 2 or 3 years. But it's just at that point, it's the same thing with Giannis. It's just like, just do it at this point. Just like get better, like learn what you have to learn. It's a little frustrating because the you know, some of these players, the thing they're missing is just that edge you get from being in the league for so long. And as fans, we get very antsy because we know that's what they're missing. But even if they also know that's what they're missing, they're not going to get it, you know, waking up the next morning and be like, oh, I'm just this mental superstar now. That's the kind of next step Tatum has to take. I always talk about how he was being mentored by Kobe Bryant before he passed. And it's really unfortunate that Kobe can't kind of walk him through this crucial point in his career, but Tatum's well on his way. Boston's going to, you know, if they can hold on to him and Brown, they're going to have a good thing going for him for a little while. But now it's about being a leader. It's about the mental side of the game. But in terms of physical peak, Jason Tatum's one of the most athletic and dominant players we have in our game today.
All right. Like you said before, top 15 is kind of that superstar tier, you'd probably have to say.
Yeah.
So my number 15, another guy who seems timeless, even though he's only, you know, a few years older than us, it's Devin Booker. He's only 24. I just looked it up.
There it is.
who knows what'll happen in terms of the finals. I'm not going to assume the Suns win it, but for what he has accomplished being in the NBA, like 18, I think he was drafted in 2016, give or take maybe. And just from how dominant he has been on such a bad team. And now finally having some weapons around him, like Chris Paul, we've seen what Devin Booker can do for the Suns. He is an utter scorer. People give him comparisons to Kobe Bryant, as you know, maybe ludicrous as that may be. He does show a lot of similarities in terms of how much of a threat he can be. You know, I'm not the cold-blooded killer Kobe was, but you get the points. He's only 24. He still hasn't hit his prime, quote unquote. So to me, that's incredible. He can do a lot, very dominant. The defense is definitely a lacking feature, but he is the superstar, I think. He was getting snubbed from the All-Star team every year. Now people have really begun to take note of Devin Booker, and I think it's going to continue to be that way for years to come.
Yes, no, Devin Booker is becoming a household name beyond belief. Great addition here. I got no issue with him being top 15. I don't quite believe it yet, but he'll get there. For me, number 15 to start the top 15. I know you don't like him, but the best ball handler in the NBA history, as you mentioned, Kyrie Irving, 50-40-90 club. This is the only player that I'm going to mention from here on out that I do not believe is a absolute definitive superstar. And the only thing holding Kyrie back is exactly what you said, is the fact that he is a toxic person and a bad leader. He cannot lead a team to the NBA Finals. However, in any situation, Kyrie Irving can do essentially anything you need him to do. 5 rebounds, 6 assists, just under 27 points per game. 50-40-90 this past season, just the 9th player to ever do it. In terms of basketball skill, one of the best ever. In terms of intelligence and I don't want to say mental stability because it sounds a little worse than I mean, but in terms of toxicity and what he brings to a locker room, it's weird to say that that factors in as much as it does, but when it's as detrimental as it has been to Kyrie's career, it has to. So 15 for me is Kyrie still, but he really teetered that line. I thought about Tatum. I thought about Mitchell. He's slipping, man. He's slipping.
All right. Number 14. My number 14 is Jimmy Butler.
Oh, you motherfucker! I can't say that.
That was the reaction I was hoping for.
Okay, explain yourself, but God, you're wrong. Robbie.
Jimmy Butler is now in the superstar echelon. You finally got what you wanted, but he falls in at 14.
He's better than Anthony Davis.
No, he's yes. not, Robbie.
Yes.
And why didn't he win the title? Why didn't he win the title last year? Tell me why.
Because LeBron James is better than Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler was the second best player in that series, not Anthony Davis. Jimmy Butler had a fucking 40-point triple-double. We'll edit out the whole fucking thing.
No, that's it. Jimmy Butler, great player. Absolute top dog. But Jimmy Butler falls in that conversation every year where he does great, helps out the teams, but he's not at that point to win a championship. And that is the one thing holding him back from being in the top 10. That's all I'll say. We've talked plenty about his accolades. He is, he went to the finals last year. His team was pretty decimated. But that doesn't give him an excuse for this year. Getting swept by the Bucks, no bueno, no matter how much we love Tyler Herro on this podcast. Jimmy Butler does a lot. And the reason why some people have been ranked above him, which I'll get to momentarily, are either career accolades. So you have guys like Chris Paul, for example, who have played longer, I think have done a lot despite not winning a championship. Or guys that I see more potential in, like I'll talk about a little bit later, where their careers haven't panned out, but being so young and scoring so much or being so dominant, I think there's a lot of potential there. So Jimmy Butler, warranted of his contract, and he's getting older, but I think the Heat gave him a good contract. Now time will tell with that. But to me, I think he's in that bad zone where he's kind of in his prime, kind of out of it. We've sort of seen what he can do. I don't know how much is left. I really don't.
I would give Jimmy at least a good two more years of the level he's been playing at.
I would agree.
But I will, I'm not going to be, as you could probably predict, not going to be getting to Jimmy Butler today. So I will just defend my honor next week, and I will do it as well as someone putting him in the top 10 can. I really, really, really want to tell you that number 14 is Joel Embiid after that, but I can't.
You can't. So
this might trigger you a little bit, though, because you had him much lower. Number 14 for me is the greatest rebounding point guard in the history of basketball. Mr. Triple-double himself, the king of the triple-double, Russell Westbrook. 22.5 points, 11.5 rebounds, 11.5 assists this past season. The fourth year in his career in which he's averaged a triple-double. And as I mentioned just before, he is now the all-time leader in triple-doubles. Russell Westbrook was much lower on my list before. He was always the top wizard. I genuinely believe he's better than Bradley Beal. And that really comes from Beal didn't do anything last year. With Westbrook out this year, Beal struggled. But when Westbrook comes back, they go on this run. They make the playoffs. The biggest thing was, is he better than Kyrie Irving for me? And for a while, I said no. And then I had this very good conversation with a couple of my brothers where we talked about if you built the perfect roster except for the point guard position, the shooting guard through center is just a fantastically built roster, and you put either Kyrie or Westbrook on those teams, Russell Westbrook helps in more ways. He just flat out does. Kyrie might be the go-to scorer, but if that's not explicitly what that team needs, that's the best thing Kyrie brings. In fact, that's probably the only thing he does better than Russell Westbrook, definitively. Ball handling, sure. But Russell Westbrook is so useful. He is so helpful. And where he isn't the best scorer anymore, he is still a 20-point-per-game scorer. And again, the greatest rebounder that point guard position has ever seen. The only reason, in my opinion, that the Wizards did anything this season was that man. Absolutely a superstar in the modern NBA. Absolutely a top 15 player, in my opinion. I'm intrigued to see how the rest of his career pans out, especially how much longer he stays in Washington. He has at least one more year there. But for now, I feel very confident with Russell Westbrook being a top 15 player, number 14 at the moment.
He's one of those guys that, yeah, from a statistics standpoint, absolutely should be probably a top 10 player, quite frankly. My problem is he doesn't have a championship. And
yep.
How much that is his fault, you can argue that till you want, till you're blue in the face. My problem with Westbrook, yeah, he does score 20, average a triple double, all that. He just can't shoot.
Nope.
He really can't.
Not even a little bit. No. Like Jimmy Butler can shoot a little bit. Russell Westbrook can't.
Yeah. And to me, like, he does a lot. He makes the people around him better. And that's going off of Kyrie Irving, that's a super important thing. But he can't win a championship alone. He cannot be the best player on a championship team. And that is something where a lot of these guys that I have, they could be the top dog and win a championship. And I'd say that's in the top 15. I like the pick. I'd have to disagree, though, because just Russell Westbrook's career, you root for the guy, but God, it's not looking good for him in terms of winning a chip, and who knows.
All right, we'll see how it pans out the rest of the way.
All right, number 13, the point god himself, CP3, Chris Paul. This has to go here, no matter what happens in the NBA Finals. His career, incredibly storied. When you thought he was washed up, going to the after getting injured in the Rockets, taking them almost to the finals, getting injured in the conference finals, not playing game 7, playing again, not getting anywhere, getting traded to the Thunder where they thought his career was over, and taking the Thunder from a long shot to even make it to the playoffs to a fifth seed, losing in 7 games to his former team, the Rockets, and then going to the Suns this year and being the key piece they needed to finally have success, make the playoffs, and then go to the finals. CP3 does a lot, and I think injury is the one thing holding him back. But you can't tell me after the entire career, Chris Paul, deservingly as a Hall of Famer, has done so much for the Hornets organization when they were a thing, to the Clippers organization, to the Rockets, to the Thunder. Everywhere he goes, he has such an impact and utterly dominant for once on this list, a point guard who can actually defend, who's a pure right. point guard, not like a Ben Simmons. does so much, so driven. I'm rooting for him to get his ring. I don't think it'll happen, but yeah, Chris Paul is my 13.
Well, you and I are in agreement.
There we
Chris
go.
Paul, the point guard, number 13 for me as well. As I always say, top two or three smartest players in basketball. His physical ability obviously has slightly taken a step down as he's gotten older. But his first finals appearance in his first year with Phoenix, the fact that he was somehow just exactly what this random team needed is beautiful, because he turned this team that was, literally a piece off from contending last year. They just missed the playoffs in the bubble to the best team in the West. Not record-wise, but they won the West. They've won two games in the NBA Finals. They're doing spectacular, and it is all because of Chris Paul. I keep coming back to this when I talk about Phoenix. As great as Devin Booker is, as lethal of a scorer as he is, Chris Paul is the most important. Chris Paul is the smartest. Chris Paul is the best Phoenix Sun that there is this season. Just under 9 assists a game, 16 points. He's not an elite-level scorer anymore, but so smart. Like you mentioned, one of the few elite-level defensive point guards that you're going to see, him, Westbrook, Simmons. Something that you don't see as much in the modern NBA, and he proves that it's still that valuable. It's still that incredible. And Phoenix, even if they don't win the championship this year, they're feeling good about what they got with at least one more year of Chris Paul left under their belt.
Brings us to number 12. We're almost there, folks. You touched upon a little bit earlier. As a Philly fan, I have watched this man torment me for the past 3-4 years. I have to put Jason Tatum. This man, giving him a few more years, it is going to be scary how good he is. And that disappoints me, because I know the Celtics will only get better no matter how good he gets. Jason Tatum, I wish we drafted him. That it still haunts me that we drafted Markelle Fultz. We were in prime position to pick him, but we did not. It's fine. It's fine. It's okay. I will live. But he is already scoring 40 points. He is the type of player who will have a bad first half, and then someone will say, oh, Jason Tatum scored like 4 points, and he'll drop 30 in the next half. And you're just like, what's happening? So dominant, such a great ISO scorer, plays really good defense too, does a lot, great wing player, the cornerstone of the Celtics franchise, unfortunately. He hasn't played for a whole lot of time, but I've already seen what he can do, and it is terrifying. And I know it's only going to get worse as a Sixers fan. In Tatum's case, he'll get better. And I don't think he can lead the Celtics to a chip with the current roster, but throw Jaylen Brown and then throw another good piece in there, there could be a very formidable.
Al Horford.
No, not Al Horford. He will not make this list ever in my life. He's specifically number one on my list of not top 50.
I'm actually pretty glad you put Tatum in your top 15, because like I said, I wanted to, and I'm assuming you watch a little more Tatum than I do, just because you watch a little more Sixers versus Celtics than I do.
Yeah, I watch him rip my heart out every week.
Exactly. So you get to see a little bit more of him, and I see sometimes a little bit of inconsistencies, but you can probably see really how valuable he is, especially in a grinded out type of season series like with the Sixers. So
have you ever seen the video? It's a courtside video at a Spurs game, and Rudy Gay catches the ball, and the fan is like, no, he's like screaming. He's like, get on him. It's Rudy Gay. He's going to score. Don't let him shoot. That's how I feel with Jason Tatum. Jason Tatum, when he catches the ball and shoots, I'm like, that's going in. He shoots. His jump shot is beautiful. He's so confident, so consistent. It terrifies me, and I hate it. He is so good. When he gets hot, he is impossible to stop, plain and simple.
I'm sorry. The only reason I'm smiling is because you say like the player you think of and that's going to hit every single shot is Jason Tatum. For me as a Heat fan, is Terrence Ross.
Okay.
Just a funny little notion. No, like I said, absolute respect there for Tatum. As much as I don't like the Celtics, I absolutely adore him as an NBA player. He is spectacular. For me, number 12 is a different power forward in the NBA. One that people are going to get mad at me for putting him here, but I don't care because he had maybe the worst year of his career since his rookie season. That is Anthony Davis of the Los Angeles Lakers. An injury-riddled season, but nonetheless struggled. Didn't even average 8 rebounds per game this season. You're talking about the most dominant big men in basketball, and they don't even average 8 rebounds a game. If this wasn't such a household name that it is, given the stats from this year, you wouldn't even put Anthony Davis in the top 25. You just wouldn't. Obviously, we think about more than just one season here. Davis was instrumental to the Lakers winning the championship last season, like we talked about briefly before, where I do not think he outplayed Jimmy Butler in that series. He was by far the third best player in that series. Bam was nowhere close to Davis's level. Davis can dominate. This is no surprise to anybody. He can drop 40 on any given night. His issue is he's not really a big man. He's more like a small forward that just happens to be 7 feet tall. So it's very hard to kind of pick and choose, especially when your best players are all forwards. You got LeBron, you got Kuzma, you got KCP, you got all get them all on the court. It's tough to also filter in Davis in a position where he's comfortable, where he kind of also has to be playing big man. It's really odd because he's so good at so many things, but to think that he's almost too good at certain things that you can't kind of place him in a lineup well, it's interesting. I think a good long offseason will help the Lakers a lot, especially him and LeBron in terms of getting healthy. So I would expect to have Davis come back into my top 10 category a year from now, but based off last season, he didn't make me feel great. And that was really the definitive purpose is why he didn't make my top 10 was just this past season.
Well, you're in luck. Number 11 for me is also Anthony Davis. You know, we have now hit the end of the road for our list for this week. Basically the same reason you said. I mean, Anthony Davis is a small forward in a power forward center body. He's incredibly dominant, but to me, yeah, didn't have a great season. It was injury riddled to say the least. Without him though, the Lakers are not good by any means. LeBron, you know, dominant player to say the least, but can't carry them anymore. Anthony Davis is sort of, I wouldn't call it the engine, but he is a necessary component to keep them running. And still incredibly dominant, plays well, great scorer, can cover a good amount of players, not just centers, but also you have some of your, sometimes you get your small forwards, power forwards, et cetera. I still like him at number 11. He fell a bit from our top 10, if I'm not mistaken, where I put him. I think I put him like 8 or 7.
Yeah, I think I had him right around there.
But who knows? His career has been great. I mean, he didn't do a whole lot on the Pelicans because there was nothing on the Pelicans. We saw what a change of scenery did. I mean, he won a championship in his first year for the Lakers. Time will tell. Hopefully he can stay healthy, but incredibly dominant player. Number 11 for me is the Brow.
Yeah, before I get to 11 here, real fast, best teammate LeBron James has ever played with, who is it?
Best teammate?
Best player LeBron James has ever played with.
Anthony Davis.
It's a tough Anthony one Davis. Because I'm so biased. I don't, like, discredit the argument of Anthony Davis. I was just very curious what you would say. So, we know my answer. I'm not going to give it to you.
I know.
Number 11 for me, again, probably one that's going to shock a lot of people. It is actually going to shock a lot of people. Number 11 for me is Luka Doncic of the Dallas Mavericks. Look, I am a defensive buff. Luka Doncic is not a good defensive player. Give me your hate. You put Jimmy Butler at 14. You can go piss off. Luka Doncic is great. Luka Doncic is a triple-double threat every night. He is one of the most dynamic scorers and offensive players we have in basketball. And I don't give a crap that he averages 8.5 assists a game. He's a ball hog. He is not ever going to be able to draw another superstar into Dallas because he has to touch the basketball too much. I think maturity and humbling himself a little bit will help, but we talk about him as this great player. I understand he's only in his third year, but he has yet to make it out of the first round of the playoffs. And I do also understand that he's played Kawhi and Paul George two of those seasons. But I put Trae Young pretty high on my list because of the great year he had. They were drafted at the same time. Luka Doncic is a far cry better than Trae Young. But in terms of when you have to bring in the other aspects rather than just skill, like how well you've been performing at this level and in the big moments, Young actually goes a little further than Luka Doncic, which doesn't factor in as much as it may seem. But it's a reason why Luka wasn't a top 10 player. Luka is going to be a top 10 player. Luka is going to be a top 3 player. Luka is going to be an MVP. Luka's probably going to win a championship at some point, whether that's in Dallas or not, who knows. But right now, this exact moment, there's a lot about the NBA game Luka Doncic doesn't know and doesn't understand and can't do. A lot of that can't do part comes on defense. Once he starts to improve in that regard, he's top 10, no question. But for now, pump the brakes on him. Number 11.
I'll put it this way. If you put Luka Doncic instead of Jimmy Butler on that Heat team, guys would have won the championship last year.
I think that's bull crap.
You have to score to win. Luka, you have to score to win. Give
up 50 to LeBron. Jimmy was averaging 30 points a game. What do you want from him?
I want 40, and Luka would have given
me 40. Of course you do. Also, the Heat were losing games by more than 10 points, so let's be real here.
Who knows? Time will tell. But that is our list for this week. Next week will be the top 10, so the culmination of 5 weeks of work. After that, who knows? We have a void to fill. I think we're going to do, probably by then, fantasy football will be coming around. We're going to give you our insight of what we think is people to draft, people to avoid, and you can choose to listen to us or not. We'll just make fun of you if you choose to ignore us and then lose in your league.
As good podcast hosts do.
As of course. Until then, folks, have a great week. We should be back to our normal schedule. Next episode after this should release next Monday, so we should be back. We're all situated for the most part. It's been a hectic month or so. So
did a little factory reset on everything. So we're gonna get you two episodes in relatively close to session at this point. But then, like Baker said, we'll be back to our regularly scheduled programming. And again, we'll finishing off our top 10, starting some new segments, bringing back some old ones as well. Until then, though, guys, enjoy the list. Enjoy our good back and forth there at the end of those top 20, because this is getting dicey now. Have a fantastic week and close it out here.
Take care, everyone.